From the broadcasting room of the White House in Washington, D.C., we bring you a special message to the people by the President of the United States, Dwight D. Eisenhower. Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States.
My fellow citizens, tonight we greet with prayers of thanksgiving the official news that an armistice was signed almost an hour ago in Korea. It will quickly bring to an end the fighting between the United Nations forces and the communist armies. For this nation, the cost of repelling aggression has been high. In thousands of homes, it has been incalculable. It has been paid in terms of tragedy. With special feelings of sorrow and of solemn gratitude, we think of those who were called upon to lay down their lives in that far-off land to prove once again that only courage and sacrifice can keep freedom alive upon the earth. To the widows and orphans of this war, and to those veterans who bear disabling wounds, America renews tonight her pledge of lasting devotion and care. Our thoughts turn also to those other Americans, wearied by many months of imprisonment behind the enemy lines. The swift return of all of them will bring joy to thousands of families. It will be evidence of good faith on the part of those with whom we have signed this armistice. Soldiers, sailors, and airmen of 16 different countries have stood as partners beside us throughout these long and bitter months. America's thanks go to each. In this struggle, we have seen the United Nations meet the challenge of aggression, not with pathetic words of protest, but with deeds of decisive purpose. It is proper that we salute particularly the valorous armies of the Republic of Korea, for they have done even more than prove their right to freedom. Inspired by President Syngman Rhee, they have given an example of courage and patriotism, which again demonstrates that men of the West and men of the East can fight and work and live together, side by side, in pursuit of a just and noble cause. And so at long last, the carnage of war is to cease, and the negotiations of the conference table is to begin. On this Sabbath evening, each of us devoutly prays that all nations may come to see the wisdom of composing differences in this fashion before, rather than after, there is resort to brutal and futile battle. Now, as we strive to bring about that wisdom, there is, in this moment of sober satisfaction, one thought that must discipline our emotions and steady our resolution. It is this: we have won an armistice on a single battleground, not peace in the world. We may not now relax our guard nor cease our quest. Throughout the coming months, during the period of prisoner screening and exchange, and during the possibly longer period of the political conference, which looks toward the unification of Korea, we and our United Nation allies must be vigilant against the possibility of untoward developments. And as we do so, we shall fervently strive to ensure that this armistice will, in fact, bring free peoples one step nearer to their goal of a world at peace. My fellow citizens, almost 90 years ago, Abraham Lincoln, at the end of a war, delivered his second inaugural address. At the end of that speech, he spoke some words that I think more nearly would express the true feelings of America tonight than would any other words ever spoken or written. You recall him: with malice toward none, with charity for all, with firmness in the right as God gives us to see the right, Let us strive on to finish the work we are in, to do all which may achieve and cherish a just and a lasting peace among ourselves and with all nations. This is our resolve and our dedication.
You have heard a special message by the President of the United States. Ladies and gentlemen, our national anthem. Ladies and gentlemen, the Secretary of State, Mr. John Foster Dulles.
As President Eisenhower has told you, there is now an armistice in Korea. The commander of the United Nations forces, with whom are joined the forces of the Republic of Korea, has signed for his command. The communist commanders have signed for their command. We hope that they have acted and will proceed in good faith. However, until that is demonstrated, the present armistice is by no means the equivalent of assured peace. So, we shall not relax our vigilance, nor shall we reduce our strength in Korea until future events show that this is prudent. This is a solemn hour. In this hour, it is fitting that as God-fearing people, we should give thanks to the Almighty that the killing of man by man will stop and that evil passions will be allayed. This is a precious gain for all who believe in human dignity and in the moral law. In this hour, we rejoice that the shadow of apprehension, which for over 3 years has darkened many a home, is now lifted. Tomorrow, no new names will be added to the long list of American casualties. And also our thoughts go out eagerly to those of our sons, for long months captives of the enemy, who are now to be returned. But our mood is also one of sorrow as we think of the many who will never return or who return bearing grievous wounds. And in this hour, let us also think of the cause for which so great a sacrifice was made. For the first time in history, an international organization has stood against an aggressor and has marshaled force to meet force. The aggressor, at first victorious, has been repulsed. The armistice leaves him in control of less territory than when his aggression began, and that territory is largely wasted. The North Korean army is virtually extinct, and the Chinese and North Korean communist armies have sustained about 2 million casualties. And of the 10 million people of North Korea, one out of every three has died from war ravages and the inhuman neglect which their rulers have imposed. these tragic results will surely be pondered by other potential nominees for aggression by satellite. All free nations, large and small, are safer today because the ideal of collective security has been implemented and because awful punishment has been visited upon the transgressors. In this hour, we welcome also the triumph of the principle of political asylum. Many of the North Korean and Chinese prisoners of war wanted hereafter to live in freedom, and the communists stubbornly resisted and insisted that these prisoners must be forcibly returned. Now, they have abandoned that position. No prisoner of war will be returned against his will. Freedom is his to choose. The consequences of this run far beyond Korea. The communist rulers now know that if they wage another war of aggression, those who unwillingly serve in their Red Armies can escape to freedom, confident that they will never be handed back. Thus, the Red Armies become less dependable as instruments of aggression, and the chance of aggression is correspondingly reduced. In this hour, when we think of the gains which this armistice records, we must think also of the cost. We owe much, indeed all humanity owes much, to the gallant troops who fought under the United Nations command. The young Americans of our armed forces wrote, often with their blood, an epic chapter of heroic response to duty. The brave people of the Republic of Korea, under the inspiring leadership of President Ri, sustained their will to fight in the face of frightful suffering. And also, 15 members of the United Nations, in addition to the United States, contributed valiant fighting men to the United Nations command. All of this cost must be held in grateful remembrance. And in this hour, as we recognize our debt, let us also recognize that gratitude is not enough. We face new tasks. An immediate task is the binding up of the wounds that war has inflicted. We shall do so in South Korea, and indeed in all Korea, if unification can be achieved. We are no less determined than before to achieve this unification. Since World War II, it has been our confirmed conviction that the unification of the peninsula must come about through political means rather than through force. Nothing has happened to alter that conviction. Now we shall press forward by peaceful means in a political conference to end an unnatural division, which, so long as it persists, will be a potential cause of strife. Finally, in this hour, let us recognize that the need for effort and for sacrifice has not passed. In war, men make vast sacrifices for peace, and then when peace is won, they fail to make the lesser sacrifices needed to keep the peace. Let us this time not relax, but mobilize for peace the resources, spiritual and material, which too often we reserve for war. Now, more than ever, we are bound irrevocably to press forward toward the goals of universal peace and justice.
You have been listening to the Secretary of State, Mr. John Foster Dulles. Officials of the United Nations have been standing by to discuss the next action to be taken by the United Nations. We take you now to the United Nations headquarters in New York.
This is the United Nations. The United States Ambassador, Mr. Henry Cabot Lodge, Jr., has just arrived with the official truce communication, which he will present to Mr. Dag Hammarskjöld, Secretary General of the United Nations. Mr. Lodge.
Your Excellency, I have a note for you which I shall read and then hand to you. Excellency, I have the honor to inform you that an armistice agreement has been entered into between the United Nations Command and the commanders of the communist forces in Korea, that is, the Korean People's Army and the Chinese People's Volunteers. The agreement was signed for the United Nations Command at 1000 hours on July 27th, 1953, Korean time, and becomes effective at 2200 hours, July 27th, 1953, Korean time. A report of the Unified Command transmitting the official text of the armistice agreement will be sent to you shortly. Accept, Excellency, the renewed assurances of my highest consideration. Let us thank God and fervently pray that this armistice heralds a lasting peace. Let us remember those who suffered and died, that this limited war might be successful in preventing World War III.
Thank you. Mr. Ambassador, the whole world is thankful that negotiations at Panmunjom have brought the fighting in Korea to an end by the signature of an armistice agreement. The United Nations Secretariat joins me in paying tribute to the men and women of many lands who have risked or given their lives in the defense of the principles of the Charter. I wish to express the firm conviction that all parties, by abiding by the armistice, will contribute to paving the way to peaceful settlement of the political and economic problems still facing us in Korea. The agreements which have been reached now open the way for the strengthening of collective action for bringing assistance to the people of Korea. The United Nations will devote the best of its endeavors to the great tasks of reconciliation and rehabilitation that lie ahead.
And now the President of the General Assembly, the Honorable L.B. Pearson, Secretary of State for External Affairs of Canada.
The good news tonight from Korea reflects the wishes of millions throughout the world that the fighting there should be brought to an end on honorable terms. Our first thought at this moment is for those who have defended the principles of the United Nations with their lives, and in the hope that their devotion might save us from the destroying horror of another world war. On June the 25th, 1950, the United Nations faced its greatest challenge, the aggression launched against the Republic of Korea. The challenge has been met by the United Nations in the spirit of the Charter. By resisting and ending aggression in Korea, the United Nations has reduced the chance of successful aggression elsewhere. In nearly 3 years of hard fighting, under bitter conditions, the forces of the United Nations Command, mainly from the Republic of Korea and the United States of America, have carried out their task with courage and determination. The armistice will end the fighting in Korea. As such, it is the first step toward a peaceful settlement in that area. The next step is to call the United Nations General Assembly back into session to prepare the way for calling the political conference recommended in the armistice terms. There are a number of decisions that will have to be made by the Assembly before this political conference can meet. There is also the need for further United Nations action to aid the Korean people in the restoration and reconstruction of their devastated land. Therefore, as President of the Assembly and in accordance with the Assembly's resolution of April the 18th last, I am informing the member governments tonight that the Assembly will reconvene at United Nations headquarters on Monday, August the 17th, to take up these Korean questions. Signing of the armistice is the end of one chapter of bloodshed and fighting. But it is only the beginning of a new and difficult one, the making of peace. This new chapter cannot be successfully completed unless the armistice terms are faithfully and scrupulously observed by all concerned. If this is done, we can move on to the next stage, toward political settlement and reconstruction in a free, democratic, and united Korea, a goal which the Korean people have fought so valiantly to reach. Such a settlement could, in its turn, lead to a solution of outstanding issues in the whole of the Far East. The magnitude of the effort already made for peace and unification in Korea is the measure of the task which lies ahead. We shall succeed in that task only if we follow the course laid down by our charter and maintain the spirit of joint endeavor that has carried us to this point in the long and hard road to peace.
This has been a combined radio and television industry presentation.
This is Leon Pearson in the NBC studios in New York. NBC's Washington correspondent Richard Harkness has prepared a special report of reaction, Washington reaction, on the Korean truce. For that, we take you now to Washington and Richard Harkness.
Well, our statesmen have spoken, but there's a question tonight still in hundreds of thousands of American homes. That is, with an armistice in Korea, when is my boy or husband or sweetheart coming home? Now, here is that situation. The armistice agreement signed tonight covers this point in definite terms. There may be, it says, no buildup of either of our forces or the enemy force, but we will be permitted under this agreement to rotate a maximum of 35,000 men a month. That 35,000 new men may be sent to Korea every month, that 35,000 Korean veterans may come home. Now, the Defense Department is not certain as yet this evening exactly how this will work. The tentative plan is to maintain the point system. This means men in Korea will compile points, as they do now, for each month of service. As veterans pile up points to a given total, they will be eligible for rotation for return to the United States. We have approximately 300,000 men in Korea. This would mean complete rotation, every veteran home within 10 months. Now, meanwhile, the reaction here in the Capitol is just now beginning to come out of the many official quarters in the capital city. NBC has recorded some of this reaction. And perhaps the best paraphrase of all this comment would be some optimism, but more caution. Let's not get our hopes up too high. As far as future peace is concerned, well, we still have a long way to go. Now, from that vast, sprawling building across the Potomac, the Pentagon, here is the reaction of the man heading our military establishment, the Secretary of Defense, Charles Wilson.
As an armistice agreement in Korea has been reached, we again pay a tribute from the heart to those hundreds of thousands of men whose bravery has proven that aggression can be stopped. The fighting abilities of our men in Korea have been the equal of those of any of our military forces in history. Words cannot express our everlasting debt of gratitude to those men who laid down their lives or suffered wounds that the assault on the free world unleashed in June 1950 would not pass unchallenged and unchecked. We all know that Korea has been only one small part of the threat that the free world faces from communist imperialism. The end of the fighting in Korea does not mean the end of that threat. Before we can relax our efforts, there must be real and continuing evidence of a complete change of heart and of objectives on the part of those who are, by devious methods as well as by open warfare, attempting to force their reactionary system on the peoples of the free world. This truce, therefore, must not result in any letdown in our determination to complete the buildup of our defenses and to maintain them for as long as need be. We must not be misled into the same demobilization which followed World War I and II. Such a demobilization would inevitably again tempt an aggressor. The Defense Department is studying the results of this truce. We know that it will be a long time before we can with safety withdraw our troops from Korea. Under the terms of the Exchange of Prisoners Agreement, months will elapse before the exchange and release of prisoners is completed. We cannot expect any important reduction in defense spending in the near future as a consequence of the truce. Manufacturers, producers, suppliers, and workers need have no concern regarding an abrupt cancellation of contracts for military equipment, supplies, and services as a result of the truce in Korea. The continuing needs of the Department of Defense, including the military assistance program, are such that current production plans will be continued until such time as an orderly production plan can be worked out that will take into account the changed Korean requirements. The Department of Defense intends to move forward towards its objective of constantly increasing the effective strength of all our military services.
And from our Congress, too, on Capitol Hill, comes that cautious outlook. It's expressed now by the chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, Senator Alexander Wiley, Republican of Wisconsin.
This truce that was signed is a step in the right direction. How big a step it will be will depend upon the interested parties, the North Koreans and their allies, the Chinese, and upon Mr. Ri and ourselves. I personally hope and pray that it will mean a real armistice, a breathing spell in which we will find time to work out terms for peace that will not only include Korea, but the whole East. That, at least, is my hope and prayer.
And now, from the other side of the political aisle in the Senate, here is comment from the Democratic vice presidential standard bearer last year, Senator John Sparkman, Democrat of Alabama.
We must all be pleased that at long last, after many toilsome and disappointing months, a truce has finally been arrived at and has been signed. I do believe, however, that we should be careful not to let ourselves be carried away with the idea that this brings the whole thing to an end. There is yet to be the political conference and all of the knotty problems that will come up in that conference. Furthermore, I think we must be careful not to let this encourage us to let down our guard. We don't know what the next move on the part of the communists will be. Even if we're successful in working out a satisfactory solution in Korea, they may move into Indochina or other points in Southeast Asia or in other points in the world. We must keep our guard up and continue to build the strength of the free world in order that we may be prepared to meet them on equal terms, either at the conference table or any other place that we may be required to meet them.
Reaction there from the nation's capital, from Mr. C.E. Wilson, who directs our defense establishment, from Senator Wiley, the man who helps shape our foreign policy in Congress, and from Senator John Sparkman, a Democratic member of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. This is Richard Harkness in Washington.
This is Leon Pearson in New York. We have a moment now for two messages which have just come in on the news tickers from Sydney, Australia. Foreign Affairs Minister Richard Casey said in Canberra last night that Australia wants to be represented at the political conference which is to follow the Korean truce. And from New York, Major General Courtney Whitney, aide to General Douglas MacArthur, said tonight the former Far Eastern commander would have no comment on the signing of the Korean truce. This has been a full hour and a half broadcast on the Korean truce, presented for radio by NBC News.